Good evening and welcome to My Stogie Mystagogie with your hosts, Don Gonzalez and
Mark Connolly.
Also joining us again tonight is our perpetual guest,
Kevin Gonzalez.
And tonight, as always, 2 segments. First is going to be, what are you smoking now? And this evening we will also be discussing Thanksgiving, since we are recording this the night before Thanksgiving. One might say Thanksgiving Eve. The eve of Thanksgiving.
Yes, indeed.
So, let's go around the horn and see what people are smoking tonight. I know you two are smoking something different. I'm not, so I'll just review the drink. So, Marcus Aurelius, what are you smoking?
I am smoking an Ave Maria Immaculata. This is a European market selection wrapper. No, American market. No, European market selection. The brown, not a Maduro. This is a AJ Fernandez offering. What I'm smoking here is 7 inches by 48 ring gauge. I won this from cigarbid.com. I got a 5-pack for $10 plus shipping, so altogether they worked out to about $3 a piece. Normally quite a bit more expensive than that. This is a Nicaraguan cigar, Nicaraguan binder and filler, and an Ecuadorian Connecticut wrapper. It lit easy, good volume of smoke, good ash, it's burning smoothly. It's a light cigar, or so far it's light.
Sure.
And it's almost, it reminds me of those Candela Arturo Fuentes.
Okay.
So it's a little grassy.
Grassy.
But it's not like green grass. Like, I don't know, maybe hay?
Straw.
Yeah.
All right. Look at you with your palate.
Probably because it's 7 inches long right now, it's smoking very cool. Because the smoke has had a chance to cool off and it's long journey down the cigar.
Now, this is not typically a length that you smoke either.
No, it's not. I'm usually in that 6-inch range, so this is a good inch longer. It may be longer than that.
Yeah. You're right, it may be. You typically smoke a Robusto size.
Yeah. This is a like a Churchill size.
Right. So it could be longer. It's not something where it cuts the smoke. And like you said, the last couple of weeks, we're easing back into our cigar games since we're kind of away from that. So we promise to get better. What are you drinking with it?
Johnny Walker Double Black. I went and bought some of this for my birthday, which was a few days ago. I had gotten some of this at my last birthday.
Okay.
So, I guess it's a birthday tradition now. And I really enjoyed it. It's peatier than most of the scotches that I drink. And I found this at Total Wine & More for a really low price. It was probably $10 cheaper than normal.
Okay. So, what's the normal price point for a bottle of that?
I think it's close to 50.
Okay.
And I got this for like 38.
All right, so where does that stand with regard to like the heart? You know, like you've got Johnny Walker Black.
Yeah.
And you have, I think, Platinum's above that. And then you've got Johnny Walker Blue. Where does this fit? Is it between Platinum and Black? Or is it above Platinum?
I'm not familiar with Platinum. I've actually never seen that before. But this is... this is well below the blue. I know that. I don't know
what. Yeah, you can tell by the price point, too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that'd be something for us to take a gander at.
And one thing I did do with this bottle is I'm keeping it in the refrigerator because of a whiskey tasting that we did with Total Wine & More, where they recommended that you keep it cooler. And rather than use ice to cool it down, you just have it cool. And then they also recommended adding a splash of water to, quote, unquote, open it up. So I put some water in yours.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You're a gentleman and a scholar.
Thank you. So that's what I'm smoking.
Vito, what are you smoking?
Smoking a house box press house blend from local shop called In a Humidor.
That's the one you smoked last week, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No, it's not.
It's not. Because this looks a little thinner.
Yeah. So now, that one was like a Padron. It really looked like a Padron. Yeah. But this is something different.
So it's a Maduro, right?
Yes.
Maduro box press. How's it smoking for you?
Good so far. I can't really pick up. I'm not picking up any distinct flavors, but it's a smooth tobacco.
Seeing as it's not infused with flavors like you're normally smoking.
Hey, yeah. Don't hate.
Your grape-flavored Swisher Sweets. Yeah. And
thought we might share it with you. Do that one night. You know what they say? Good comparison of the low-end cigars. I'm not even sure what to call a cigar.
I'm just going to smoke Black and Milds next week.
Yeah, it's kind of like a fuse. It sparks and stuff. And if you do it out in the open, NORAD picks it up as a heat signature for a missile launch.
All right, so what type of lemonade are you pairing this with today? Or are you not drinking lemonade tonight?
No, it's my usual. It's a mixture of the two flavors, strawberry with a little bit of orange mango.
Okay. All right.
In a QT cup.
Indeed. I had that earlier, so I just took it into the shop.
Oh.
And just said, charge me for a drink, but I'm going to use my own cup.
Okay.
And get more for it.
Yeah.
Hey, when you've been a customer for 20 years, they tend to go, whatever.
Well, the expensive part of the drink is the cup anyway, so.
Yeah.
They made out. Anyway.
Put a podcast from there sometime.
We could. They have the space. They wouldn't mind because I started talking to them in Albanian.
Well, good job.
What is it about Albanians and Italian restaurants? Because, you know, Amore, now called Meals Amore, is run by Albanians.
Do they have Peninsula Envy? Whoops.
What? That was a delayed bleep.
Yeah.
All right. We assure you that we had not been drinking before we started the episode.
You need to speak for yourself.
All right. So I'm smoking a Arturo Fuente Hemingway bestseller. And I reviewed this 2 weeks ago, so I will not review it again. So if you're interested in what this is about, listen to 2 episodes prior.
Right.
I, too, am drinking the Johnny Walker Double Black, and with a splash of water, I'm told, since I didn't pour it myself. And so far, I've picked up that extra peatiness to the best of my ability, since I'm not as much a scotch drinker as you are. It's to me, it's not as smooth as the other ones that we've consumed. And for me, when I say smooth, I mean it doesn't have that little hint of burn that some whiskeys will give you. This has a little bit of a hint of that, not anything that makes me want to shake my head or something after I drink it. And I want to, it's got some sort of hint of some sort of undertone of a, almost an apricot sort of flavor for me. I'm trying to figure out what it is. I could be wrong on that. I could be getting that from the cigar.
Mm.
But I like it.
Good.
So
I'm glad
we're trying something different today.
Well, like I said, when I got it for my birthday last year, I really liked it. I mostly go with the Dewar's handle, which I can buy a handle for less than I can buy this... what is this? 3/4 of a liter or something?
Right.
Anyway, I really like it.
I might not be able to wait until episode 50 for us to break out of blue.
Oh, awesome.
See if we can crowdsource the purchase of blue for Christmas.
There you go.
All right. So that's what we're smoking now. We'll hopefully remember, because we didn't last week, come back and revisit what... we didn't.
No, we didn't. For those who are interested in the what I'm calling a Padron clone from the in the humidor at Josie and Keller Springs.
That's correct.
It finished as well as it started, and for $5.95, it was a bargain.
All right. So that concludes the first part of our discussion about what are we smoking now. On the back end, we'll try to remember. To come back and tell you a little bit about the cigar and the drink. So, in honor of the fact that most of you will be listening to this the day after Thanksgiving while you're having your leftover turkey sandwiches, and in our case, turkey tacos,
turkey flambé,
turkey frame soup.
Really? Which is
pretty tasty.
Turkey frame?
Yeah, it's when you take the carcass of the turkey.
Yeah.
And you cut it up with meat scissors and you put it in a pot of boiling water with onions and garlic. And you boil it and it boils off all the meat off of it and then you sift it. You create a broth and then you take all the meat, put it back in, put all your vegetables in there, throw some rice, and you got yourself a soup. All right, so we got Kevin, our resident Captain Catechism over there, to get us started with a couple of definitions of Thanksgiving from a Catholic perspective.
So, when talking about Thanksgiving from a Catholic standpoint, the Eucharist tells us, and Eucharist, generally cricket, the Catechism tells us, and if you look at 1328, that the Eucharist is an act of Thanksgiving. And in fact, in Greek, the a term for Thanksgiving is Eucharistin. And the Eucharist in and of itself is a sacrifice of Thanksgiving to the Father. And we can see this in Luke chapter 22:19, and a different version of the same in 1 Corinthians 11:24.
Will you read one of those?
Sure. Looking at Luke 22:19, it says, "And he took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, and gave it to them, saying, 'This is my body, which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me.'"
And that should sound familiar to people, because we hear that at the Mass, those exact words. Do we not?
Indeed.
All right. So, as Catholics, we have Thanksgiving every day, potentially. Yep. We go to Mass every day, at least every Sunday, Holy Day.
And every time you say the Our Father, you're giving thanks.
Explain.
Well, hallowed is an invocation of praise and thanksgiving to our Father.
An invocation?
Invocation.
Okay, I have something you want to say about that one.
Well, so, I kind of disagree.
Read Catechism paragraph 2806.
Read it to me.
Let me get back over to it. The term to hallow is to be understood here not primarily in its causative sense, but above all in an evaluative sense. To recognize as holy, to treat in a holy way. And so, in adoration, this invocation is sometimes understood as praise and thanksgiving.
Sometimes understood. Okay, I'll give you that. What I was thinking of in the Our Father, hallowed be thy name, is one of the petitions. We're asking God to cause his name to be holy and understood as holy in the world. So that's a both and, another Catholic both and. So,
are we? I don't know. I mean, I guess we could do a complete episode of a deconstruction of the Our Father, but it seems to me that that's a declarative statement that his name is holy.
It is, but if you apparently look at the Greek, it's a petition, and it's like, if only your name were hallowed, if only your will would be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Sounds like you're throwing down a Greek challenge here. Because, you know, with the resources I have available to me,
yeah,
via verbum, we could do that. So
okay.
Maybe we'll revisit that.
All right.
All right.
Tune in next week.
All right. So it sounds, I mean, if we want to talk about it next week, we can talk about it between now and then, because we've got Advent coming up as well. So.
Yep, we do.
I will say that that does fall under the Article 3, the Seven Petitions.
All right. Okay. A lot there.
Yes.
A little bit more than we expected to talk about. So that's okay. Stuff like that happens, and this is an organic podcast, so
yes,
we'll save that for food for thought for another day. But
food?
Yes. And pun intended. But I guess that does give us a foundation of the notion that Thanksgiving is a very Catholic thing, or at least Thanksgiving itself, which is a nice segue to the proposition I'd like to make, and that is that Thanksgiving as a holiday or celebration has significant Catholic roots. And I borrowed this information from Dr. Taylor Marshall's website and blog called taylormarshall.com. I think he also posted this on his podcast blog, which is the Maccabee Society. So I'm not going to go into detail all six of the... He makes 6 points about the Catholicity of Thanksgiving. I'm only going to highlight three of them. I'm simply going to skim them. And I recommend that if you do a Google search for Catholic Thanksgiving and Taylor Marshall, it'll pull up as the first hit. So the three things I want to point out is, first of all, that Catholics were celebrating Thanksgiving in what is now the United States or America way before the Pilgrims did at Plymouth Rock. In fact, the first Thanksgiving, according to Taylor Marshall, was celebrated on September 8th, 1565, on the feast, and September 8th is the feast of the birth of the Blessed Virgin Mary in St. Augustine or St. Augustine, Florida. And that was 56 years before the Pilgrims celebrated it. And it was celebrated by some Spanish settlers who were led by an explorer named Don Pedro Menendez. And it was a group of about 200 Spaniards and 300 Native Americans who celebrated Mass with the ship's priest.
Really?
Upon landing in Florida in a celebration for their safety. The second time prior to the Pilgrims celebrating Thanksgiving took place on April 30th, 1598. And again, the Spanish explorers led by Don Juan de Oñate, who was accompanied by friars, and they settled in the part of the Americas that is north of the Rio Grande, which is kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
And they celebrated that feast 23 years before the Pilgrims did. So. And then finally, the celebration of what most people think is the first Thanksgiving at Plymouth Rock with the Pilgrims, the story, and I'll let you read Taylor Marshall's rendition of it because I don't want to go into great detail. But the Native American who plays a prominent role in that story is a guy by the name of Squanto. And it turns out that Squanto was actually converted to Catholicism before he encountered the Pilgrims.
Really?
Yeah. So, as Taylor Marshall calls it, the beloved hero of Plymouth Rock was Catholic. So he was the one that...
I have heard about this guy because he actually ended up in Europe for a while.
Yes.
And came back.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. So there's a really neat story about him. And again, Taylor Marshall talks about it briefly in the post that I just recommended. In addition to that, in that post, he has a link to a fuller story about Squanto in particular. So if you're interested in reading that, I really do recommend reading that because it's a great story.
Cool.
So those are Catholic roots of Thanksgiving. Simply just to kind of, you know, a little bit of trivia, but also just to kind of indicate the universality of the church and the fact that we were celebrating a form of Thanksgiving way before the Pilgrims were here. So that's that.
So is that like a Catholic one-upmanship on the Protestants?
I don't want to fall into triumphalism or anything there, Mark. I'm just simply pointing out facts.
Okay. All right.
So what we'd like to talk about next is like some personal stories about Thanksgiving. Mark and I had lunch today, and we were sharing some stories, and thought this would be kind of a cool thing for us to add. Could be, you know, so the three of us haven't really kind of scripted what we're going to talk about, so... you shared a story that I thought was interesting, if you want to share that. I have no idea what Kevin's going to share. You know, each of us could share one story, maybe even two, depending on time constraints.
All right.
So, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I had told you at lunch that Thanksgiving had always been my favorite holiday, even more so than Christmas. And you said, why? And I said, because now I'm the oldest of seven kids, so there was nine people at our peak sitting around the table. My mom had seven kids in 10 years, so by the time I was 16, the youngest child was six. And so all of us would be sitting at the table. And it was the one day in the year when really everybody was at the table. We usually had Thanksgiving earlier in the day, so 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Somehow my mom managed to get everything done in a way to where I never sensed any kind of stress in the household. Maybe I was just oblivious, but I never experienced any stress. Everything seemed to be just running smoothly. The table would be laid out, and it was that, you know, that familiarity of all your favorite foods, and then foods that you didn't like, but in our house, when something was put on the table, you ate it. But on Thanksgiving, if you didn't want the green bean casserole, you didn't have to have green bean casserole. And to me, green bean casserole was like the nastiest thing on the planet.
I gotta tell you something about green bean casserole.
Yeah.
So prior to being married to Stacy, I had no idea what a green bean casserole was. And I remember the first year that we celebrated Thanksgiving with her side of the family, the tradition was that we would all go have dinner at her sister's house. And everybody from, you know, the people that were nearby, her mother, her sister, and her children, and our children, would all gather at Cindy's house and have Thanksgiving. And I remember the very first one I attended, I was served this green bean casserole, and I loved it. And I'm like, what is this? And they all looked at me, and they're like, are you kidding? And I was like, no, I don't know what this is. And they're like, it's green bean casserole. And my response was, oh, this must be white people food. And so it became a running joke that every year when they brought it out, Cindy or her husband Thor, that is his real name.
Thor?
Yes.
All right.
Would say, we're bringing out the white people food. I mean, I didn't mean it to be insensitive. It was simply that, and it's funny because in our household growing up, Thanksgiving was always very traditional American Thanksgiving. We had the turkey, the stuffing or dressing and all that. There was never any Mexican food associated with Thanksgiving. That was saved for Christmas.
Okay.
So, but that was a dish that I had never encountered.
Wow.
So, I'm sorry.
That's all right. So, you know, everybody has their kind of favorite Thanksgiving food, but I think also pretty much everybody, whether they will admit it or not, their mom's dressing is the best. They'll tell their wife, oh, this is just like mom's. But in my case, I've never had any dressing since my mom made it. And for all I know, it was Pepperidge Farm stuffing. But it was cooked inside of the turkey.
So therefore it was stuffing.
And none of us died.
Just, so it was stuffing, not dressing.
It was stuffing. So she always made a pan of dressing, I guess.
Yes.
But then we always had the stuffing out of the turkey, and the stuffing out of the turkey tasted best. And I don't really care for turkey. I would eat the white meat mostly because it was a platform for cranberry sauce. And I never had...
What do you mean it was a platform for cranberry sauce?
Well, I would put cranberry sauce all over it.
All right.
And we never had the cranberry sauce with the cranberries in it. I always had the stuff that came out of the can. I was always mystified by the fact that once you got it out of the can, it still had the ridges in it. Mm-hmm. It always amazed me. And so it would sit there in its little crystal dish, this perfect cylinder of cranberry sauce, which was not sauce, it was like jello. And you'd slice a piece off of it and put it on your turkey, and it made the turkey edible. And we always had, you know, the little gherkin, little tiny pickles that we never had any other time of the year. And all of us at some point put the black olives on our fingers and sat there at the table with black olives on all 10 fingers, back when they would still fit on mine. So we had,
what was that all about?
That was just, we had black olives at Thanksgiving dinner, and they always went on your fingers. Okay. You've never seen that? There's a Far Side cartoon where it shows the first Thanksgiving, and all the pilgrims are sitting there with olives on their fingers. All right,
we're going to have to find that particular cartoon and put it in the show notes. So,
but the thing I remember most was the conversation. We would all sit at the table, Dad at one side, Mom on the other side, and the kids pretty much in age order. And we would talk and we would laugh and it would go on for hours. And then there was always the pies. I didn't like pumpkin pie, so I never ate any of it because I didn't have to. I always ate pecan pie. And then Mom would sometimes make rhubarb pie, so that would be part of the festivities. But what I remembered most was the relaxed conversation and I'm going to say the joy of us all sitting around talking. So that was why it was my favorite. Now, I moved out of the house when I was 17, so my last Thanksgiving dinner was when I was 16 or 17. And after that, I had Thanksgiving dinner with girlfriends or whatever, and I got married when I was 19. And my parents moved to New Jersey, so I never had another Thanksgiving dinner like that, but I always held out hope that it would happen again. And then one day when I was 25, my mom called to tell me that her and my dad were getting a divorce. And I immediately burst into tears. And the thought that came into my mind was, there will never be another Thanksgiving dinner. And so Thanksgiving has always been a little strange for me ever since then. It's gotten better, but there for a long time, it was just, you know, the dressing wasn't the same. They would forget the black olives, you know. And then when we moved here to Texas, well, and that, this was in Texas when we had the last Thanksgiving, but what we called yams or sweet potatoes, everybody here called sweet potato pie and covered them with marshmallows. I couldn't stand that. I can eat it okay now, but I like yams with butter, salt, and pepper. So we would have a yam on our table, like a sweet, like a baked potato, and you cut it open and you load it up with butter and salt and pepper, and that's how I liked it.
Okay.
And so you just didn't have that here. You know, you have this thing with, you know, like a some sort of a aberrant s'more in a big pan.
I don't think everybody does that, because I remember growing up that we used to do the butter only on our sweet potatoes.
Anyway, so I still have these wistful, fond memories of Thanksgiving, and I still think back to those days, and I miss that.
Okay.
So, and I try to introduce olives wherever I go, even though they no longer fit on my fingers.
Right.
So, I always split as I try to put them on.
Well, your fingers are just a little bit bigger now.
Yeah, a tad. So.
Maybe you just need bigger olives.
Yeah, I've tried to find big enough olives, but. Anyway.
Alright, well, thanks for sharing. Anything else you want to share?
This year, we're going to be having Thanksgiving with a lot of reasons to thank, but we're going to have it at Leon and Teresa's. That's my stepson and his wife. Rosie's first grandson was born day before yesterday or 2 days ago. And we're having it at their house, but Teresa's mom and dad are providing everything. So we got the Thanksgiving of a brand new baby. We got Thanksgiving of my prostate cancer diagnosis. We've got a lot to be thankful for. So I think we'll have a good Thanksgiving.
Kevin?
Thanksgiving for me has always been about family. You know, a lot of people travel during the holidays, and for a lot of people, though, their family's out of state. A good chunk of our family is local, so you think we get to see each other more often than just holidays, but unfortunately that's not always the case. And I've always looked forward to it because of my Uncle Thor, who's mentioned earlier.
Thor, I'm sorry.
That's his name.
That's his actual name. He's awesome. But Thor and I have a lot in common. Well, the biggest thing we have in common is guns. We both like guns. So we always get to talk about firearms and the like. But also, Thor will talk about cars with me. And anybody who knows me knows how passionate I am about cars. And not a lot of people, especially people who can't speak to cars on the same level I can, will actually sit down and actually have a discussion with me about cars. But Thor not only listens, he actually is inquisitive. And I just enjoy it. I enjoy the conversations. And I look forward to it every year. And there was one particular year that Thanksgiving just... it didn't go as planned. And there wasn't a lot of conversation. And it was actually frustrating.
That was last year.
Yeah, I guess that was last year. There was no real conversation. In fact, when I got there on time, and everybody had pretty much already...
Had already eaten
it. And it was like, well, this isn't cool. Like, this, it's not what I look forward to. And so that kind of just sucked. But that's what Thanksgiving's been about for me. It's just getting to see family and getting to have those conversations I don't get to have really any other time of the year.
Yeah.
I think it's just because I think a lot of it too is I like my uncle a lot, and that's why I think I look forward to anything else. I also like my aunt and my mom's banter. They go toe to toe, and it's funny because I remember the first Thanksgiving that my wife joined us. My mom and my aunt were having one of their back and forth moments, and my wife, I don't remember exactly what she said, but she pretty much looked at. I don't remember if she looked at my mom or if she looked at me, but she was like, "Now I know where you get it from." And I've always tried to tell her that my sarcasm and my quick wit is inherited, and she never really fully believed it.
Definitely from your mom, not from me.
So, but yeah, so she kind of understood where my darker sense of humor comes from.
So that Thanksgiving that you're describing is the Thanksgiving that we celebrate with your mother's side of the family that we've traditionally, for many years now, have celebrated on the Friday after Thanksgiving because all the kids have grown up, your cousins and you, all of y'all married now and everything, and to give time for those of them that live out of town to come into town, we've celebrated that on Friday. And this year we found out kind of late that it's been canceled and then kind of pivoted with your grandmother hosting it at her house. Would you like to share what your plans are with that?
Yes. I guess talking about something to be thankful for this year is my wife and I are just closed actually Monday on a new house. We were looking to get our daughter into a better school district than we're currently in. And
She's only two years old,
so we weren't in a rush, but, you know.
Planning ahead.
Yeah, planning ahead. We were in a position where we could do it now, so there was no reason to delay if we found the right house. And we found a house in Allen that we actually came in $7,000 under their asking price, which, in this market, there's no way in heck you should win that bid. But we did. Everything worked out. So not only we're blessed to be in a good school district, but we have the space to finally be able to host. And so we're going to take over hosting for the holidays, for both Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Nice.
And we haven't figured out, we're going to try to figure out if we have to do multiples to have like both sides, her family and our family there. At the same time, it would be great. If we have to do multiple days, it's great too. But it's just nice to be able to basically just start a new tradition, because we've been doing Christmas at our current house for my side of the family. We actually took over from my grandmother years ago when it just became too much for her to try to host. And so it's gonna be nice to see if we can get people to get over to our house. Especially because, not this year, but I'm hoping by next year, I'll have a nice outdoor kitchen.
Ah, awesome.
Well, that's cool. So I just want to say that one of the cool things that that has happened, you know, when Kevin married Kate, you know this, I've shared this with you. It took me a while to warm up to Kate. And as I got to know her, I got to love her as part of the family. And I soon discovered that she, like Kevin, is big on family. Mm. And it's been amazing to me how wonderful both of them have been about including family. They go out of their way, for example, to make sure that Stacy and I get to see Gabby whenever possible, and they go out of their way to include my mom and whatnot. So that's been a great blessing. And I'm really proud of the fact that they're willing to do that sort of thing. Thanksgiving, for me, is kind of a mixed holiday. And, I think of, Stacy's favorite TV show of all time. In fact, we used to have date night around, I think it used to come on Thursday nights. The TV show Friends, it's her favorite show. In fact, I've bought her every single disc set of all 10 seasons. And one of the running jokes on that show is their Thanksgiving episode is always about the dysfunctionality of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And for some people, Thanksgiving is kind of dysfunctional because you were describing the greatness, and Kevin was too, of Thanksgiving being this opportunity for conversation. But when you have family members who aren't good at conversation, or there's baggage floating around, it can be an uncomfortable time. And we've had several of those Thanksgivings on my side of my family. And that's complicated by the fact that years and years ago, my father left my mother on Thanksgiving Day. And so for many, many years, we didn't celebrate Thanksgiving because of that. And when I say we didn't celebrate it, I mean, there was no celebration. You know, if you're going to do Thanksgiving, I've got two other brothers, you would do it on your own. And like, I remember that there were a couple of Thanksgivings where we would go buy a turkey breast and do a small Thanksgiving at home. But the good Thanksgivings that I remember when things started to heal and my mother was willing to do Thanksgiving again. I have two brothers. I'm the oldest of three. And we would get together and have, kind of a traditional meal. As I said earlier, we're a family that has Mexican heritage. We don't have any Mexican food at Thanksgiving. That's typically on Christmas. Sometimes we'll have turkey, but most times we won't. We don't do the ham thing either. But we'll normally do like tamales and tacos and that sort of thing for Christmas. But on Thanksgiving, it's all about the turkey. It's all about the stuffing and dressing. The funny thing, I was shaking my head when you were talking about everybody loves their mom's stuffing. I don't. I never have. And it's really funny because my mother's stuffing is actually a recipe that she got from my fraternal grandmother. And it has ground meat in it. And I've never liked it. To me, dressing or stuffing, and there are other people that put sausage in it and stuff like that. For me, it's always just cornbread based. In fact, my favorite stuffing is stovetop stuffing.
Yeah.
And people make fun of me, but we've gone even to Cindy's, Kevin's aunt, Cindy's deal, because she's always does a big deal. Every year it's about the new kind of gourmet style of cranberry sauce. Which is funny because her son will show up with a can of cranberry.
Yeah.
Because they had to have the cranberry sauce in the can because that was part of tradition. You can't have Thanksgiving without that. And I would show up with two things. I would show up with the little circular carton of stovetop stuffing that Stacy would make for me. And then I would always bring extra gravy. Because I love turkey, but I hate dry turkey.
Yeah.
So I've got to have plenty of gravy, so that's just kind of a funny aside. So I didn't like my mom. My mom knows that. My mom knows I don't like her stuffing. But one of the things that we did that's, everybody knows that there are like three major football games that take place on Thanksgiving Day. The Lions always play against somebody. The Cowboys always play against somebody. And I don't even know if they have this game anymore. Kevin might know because his wife went to A&M. A&M and UT used to play on Thanksgiving night. I don't even know if they have that game anymore. So those used to be the big traditions. And our tradition in our house was that since we had three brothers, after everybody's meal had settled down, we would go outside and play football.
Yeah.
And we'd throw the football around. And any neighborhood kids would come around and play, you know, with the older brothers as well. And one of my fondest memories is when my brother was on his own, my middle brother, Tony, he had a house out in the country, and he had about, I don't know, 3 or 4 acres. You were with us then.
Yeah, next time I... Mm-hmm.
And we all, you know, Tony had cooked the turkey and everything. I think he did a fried turkey. And we all had a great meal and everything. And then we're like, hey, it's football time. And we looked around, and he didn't have a football because his dog, he had a cow dog, a blue heeler, that had chewed up everything in his garage, including the football. And I remember that Tony, my brother, is great about just, he's like the MacGyver of the family. And he found a bunch of old white tube socks and put them together and wrapped them up in duct tape, and we made an impromptu football out of socks and duct tape.
Yeah.
And got out in his big old yard and tossed the football with me and him and my brother Matt, who's my youngest brother, and Kevin were out there throwing the football, and it was muddy, and we all got muddy and grassy and just had a great time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of one of our traditions. And lately, my mother has added a twist of doing board games, and that's been fun, but that's also created some uncomfortable moments because both me and Kevin's wife, Kate, are very competitive when it comes to playing these games. And I remember last year, do you remember this, when we were playing, I don't even remember what game it was, that your mom and I were partners, and I don't remember if Kate was partnered up with you, and we were getting into arguments about whether or not something or another bent the rules, and your mother started trash talking. I can see Kate's temper starting to boil up a little bit. So, yeah, so that's our Thanksgiving.
Neat.
So, yeah, it's gotten better. You know, this year, we're not, it's kind of a weird year because even in our side of the family, my two brothers aren't going to be able to make Thanksgiving this year. My middle brother, his oldest son has only been back for about a year now. And his youngest son just had a baby. And his daughter has trouble traveling in, so they're going to do their own Thanksgiving. You know we're invited to that, right? But afterwards, if y'all want to go over there. They're not doing a traditional Thanksgiving. They're just doing stuff, so. So it's going to be a little bit different. Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any favorite foods? Favorite desserts?
My favorite dessert was always pecan pie.
Okay. I'm a pumpkin pie man. I like my mother-in-law's pumpkin pie because it has just a little hint of spiciness to it. So I always look forward to that.
Like jalapenos?
No, just like that. I think it's nutmeg that's okay in it that gives it just a little extra kick. And Kevin's wife makes a mean pecan pie.
Yeah.
And it's not your traditional one. What is it that she does with the pecans?
They're crushed.
They're crushes. So it's a crushed pecan pie. Huh. So it's not the big pecans. I really like it.
Yeah.
And she can't, that's like her go-to as well, is that pecan pie. And it's, my wife doesn't cook. I'm the cook in the house. In fact, I remember early on in our marriage, when I was still working in retail, when I would come home, when I worked late, I could always tell when she tried to cook her own meal because it smelled like somebody tried to burn the house down. But she didn't really bake either. And her, I don't even remember how many years ago it's been now, but her grandmother passed away on her dad's side. And her grandmother was an incredible baker. Always loved to cook, always loved to bake. And after her grandmother passed away, it was like 2 or 3 months later, just out of the blue, I remember Kate was like, I'm going to bake something. And she hasn't stopped since.
Really?
And she's out of nowhere, she went from zero to hero in baking. And so anytime there's a special event at work or for holidays, she's got to make a pecan pie.
Yeah.
And Kate's in IT, so she's very technical. So she's very by the book, with recipes, which I found out with baking, you kind of have to be unless you really know what you're doing. But sometimes she'll mess up, She's like, oh, this is going to be horrible. But like every time she messes up, it's like the best pecan pie she's ever made.
Or the apple pie that she made for my birthday that she thought wasn't
right. Really good. Yeah, she thought was... What did she say? I don't remember what she said, but she had. She's always like, oh, it's this or that. And I'm like, you're way too hard on yourself. Because every time you... I tell her, every time you say you mess up, it turns out to be fantastic.
Yeah.
But I don't really... I'm weird with Thanksgiving because I don't really have a favorite. I'm just kind of a run-of-the-mill. I like mashed potatoes. I like the rolls. I don't do anything that says casserole. I hate casseroles.
So you don't like the green bean casserole?
No. I just don't do casseroles.
Because we weren't going to have any for tomorrow, but I asked your mom to make a batch.
Yeah, it's just, I just don't. I told... Because there was one year, her dad invited us over. He said he was going to make breakfast. And I'm thinking, all right, eggs, bacon, sausage. This dude made a breakfast casserole. I was like, serious? Like, he was like offended because it didn't taste right. My wife's like, but it's the same thing you eat separately. I'm like, but once you throw it in a casserole, you messed it up for me.
Yeah, because the bacon gets soggy and it's not crispy and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I don't do stuff.
What about corn casserole?
Throw casserole, man. I don't do it. But here's the thing.
What if you just called it corn pudding?
If you call it something else, I'll try it. I don't know why. It's just in my head. But I just, you say... anything, and you follow a casserole, I'm out.
So I like corn casserole. So favorite, like, part of the meal for me was always the sweet potatoes.
All right.
I just, and the other thing was corn casserole. So the other day at work, we had a lunch for the staff last week. And I said I would make corn casserole. And so Rosie and I were running around. And at 9 o'clock at night, I went, oh my God, I'm supposed to make a corn casserole and bring it tomorrow. So Rosie gets on Pinterest. And she finds the 5-ingredient can't-screw-up corn casserole. And I made it, and it was delicious. So I got to tell you this recipe. 1 can of corn. 1 can of cream corn. 1 cup of sour cream, 1 box of Jiffy Mix cornbread, and 1 stick of butter. And you don't drain the corn, so you pour the whole corn in a bowl, you pour all the cream corn in a bowl, you put in the cup of sour cream, you dump the box of Jiffy Mix in there, and you melt the butter and you put it in there, and you mix it all together and you pour it in a pan and you put it in the oven for 50 minutes at 350 degrees. And it was delicious.
I'd eat that.
It was delicious.
And there was none left.
No.
That's always a good sign of a good dish. I'm glad you brought up workplace because, I've been an educator for 19 years now. Traditionally in our school, we've done a potluck.
Yeah.
And the principal would always buy the turkey. And then we had an older teacher who used to make the turkey. And she had the most incredible dressing I've ever had. We actually had two older teachers. And both of them made the best dressing. And it was just a fight to have a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And everybody knew what everybody was going to bring. Like, I made a broccoli rice and cheese casserole that everybody liked, and it was always gone. And like one year I wasn't going to bring it. They're like, oh no, you got to bring it. And that was our tradition for many, many years. And then, the last 4 years, we've gone through 4 principals in the last 4 years. And the tradition has kind of died because these younger principals aren't on board with buying the bird and all that stuff. And so last year was a big deal. And one of the older teachers, when we were starting to do the potluck, threw out this crazy notion. She said, well, I don't know if those people have cats. So I don't know if I want to eat the food. So then that turned into, well, then let's cater it. And then catering led to catering it from a Mexican restaurant. So we had Mexican food. I was like, this isn't Thanksgiving meal.
Yeah.
And this year, our National Honor Society, who have had a rough year because at the beginning of the year, we put our president and vice president on probation for kind of messing up our orientation. And they really stepped up. They came to me about 2 weeks ago and said, hey, we have this idea of doing Thanksgiving dinner as a thank you to all the faculty. Do you think they'll be okay with that? And I was like, well, let me check and make sure we don't have anything planned. And if we do, we'll just adjust and let y'all come in. And I mean, we're a small school. We only have 400 kids, so our National Honor Society is about 30, 35 kids. And they brought in a smoked turkey. They got one of the teachers to bring in a smaller turkey, another teacher to bring ham. And they brought all the side dishes and desserts. And it was the most incredible. Oh, and on top of that, three of them were members of the orchestra, played violin, viola, and piano during the entire time that we ate.
That's
and
awesome.
And it was the best. And I told the president, I said, you guys have got to figure out a way to make this a tradition because you guys just knocked it out of the ballpark.
Wow.
So I'm really proud of them. They, and the food was just phenomenal. So I'm pretty
That's pretty awesome.
There were a lot of moms that were baking, and we had like four different types of mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
And it was just great.
That's awesome.
So I was, tip my cap to my kids.
Cool.
From a work standpoint, I've never had a company I've worked for that actually really did anything. In fact, Thanksgiving was like just kind of like a little mini vacation. But when I was in Armored Security, the company I worked for, every year, even to this day, they issue out turkeys to all the guards.
That's very old school.
And so they ask if you want one or not. Usually if you got a cool branch manager, he or she will generally order a few extras. Because what happens is guards will say, hey, do you want another turkey? So they'll, you know, somebody could end up with two or three turkeys. Somebody didn't want theirs. But then they donate them. And it's up to the branch manager to find a local place to donate any extras to. But it was pretty cool. And I was, because the time I was driving a truck, I was in charge of going and picking up the turkeys. So I just, there was 2 years of truck full of turkeys.
Wow.
But it was a pretty cool experience though, because that can't be cheap.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
We're not the biggest company, but I mean, there's, I think, 27 to 30 branches nationwide. And you're talking, some of our bigger branches, some of the bigger branches had 80 to 100 guards.
Yeah.
So mine alone was a small branch, and we had 42 to 50 turkeys every year. So, but it took us back to the fact that, because that company's still family owned and operated. And so it kind of, that was one of the few things that they did that was really family oriented that was awesome. This year, work wise, it's just mini vacation again.
Yeah.
4 days off.
Speaking of old school, my company, the owners of the company send to all their management and office staff a smoked turkey, a giant tin of shelled pecans, and the best toffee I've ever had in my life. Rosie and I actually hoarded that, and we stretched that past Christmas. In well into January. It was amazing. So that was cool.
So the last thing I'd like to throw out is, are there any particular additional traditions associated with your family Thanksgiving that come to mind that you'd like to share? Because when Kevin was talking, he just reminded me of one that we do with my mom. That...
No, just the meal and the foods.
Kevin?
No. Nothing that
stands out for you?
Yeah, nothing stands out.
Well, the one that stood out for me is that my mom, forever and ever, has made it her... My mom's always kind of been the spiritual matriarch of the family. You know, I've said before on the podcast that I learned how to pray, and I learned about faith from her. And when I say that when we had to talk about expectant faith, I feel like I've always had that, because I learned that from my mother. So she's always been the spiritual leader of our family. And even though at various stages of our lives, the brothers and I, of being away from the church, or being in the church, or whatever our season of life would be, she always made it a point that, first off, we'd pray over the meal, and everybody's got to gather around and hold hands, even the little ones. And everybody's... when we say grace, we start off by everybody sharing something that they're thankful for. So that's always been kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, even when I was younger and kind of didn't want to do it, it stands out as something that's memorable.
Yeah, that's neat.
So I just wanted to make sure to get that on the record. All right, so our final discussion about Thanksgiving that we'd like to share with you guys is years ago when Mark and I were going through the master's program at Ave Maria, the Institute for Pastoral Theology. We had one professor in particular that we had for every single semester that we were in the program, Dr. David Twellman. And he shared with us, I think it was our last year in the program, we had him the weekend before Thanksgiving, and he shared the story, kind of the story behind the story of that first Thanksgiving at Plymouth Rock, and tied it with a scripture that, correct me if I'm wrong, that was shared at that first,
yes,
first meal.
Right.
And so Mark is going to start us off by telling the story, and then I'll close out by sharing the scripture.
All right. Some of the listeners may have heard of, there's, I guess, a kind of a tradition out there called the five kernels of corn. And so this is a variation on that. And so if you wanted to do this at your next Thanksgiving, kind of an optional setup is to have everybody stand around the table with the empty plate on the table. And on the plate, you put five kernels of corn, okay? So we have all heard of the Mayflower and the Pilgrims, and little did they know that from such humble beginnings, they would be the beginning of a great and prosperous nation. We do well in the midst of this plenty to remember where we came from and how we got here. So in August of 1620, a group of about 40 people seeking religious freedom joined a much larger group of comparatively secular colonists and set sail from England on two merchant ships, the Mayflower and the Speedwell. And you may wonder why you've never heard of the Speedwell. Well, the Speedwell began to leak almost immediately, and the ships headed back to port. The travelers squeezed themselves and their belongings onto the Mayflower and set sail once again. In addition to the 102 passengers, the officers and crew consisted of between 25 and 30 people, bringing the total persons on board the Mayflower to approximately 130. Because of the delay caused by the leaky Speedwell, the Mayflower had to cross the Atlantic at the height of storm season. As a result, the journey was horribly unpleasant. Many of the passengers were so seasick they could scarcely get up, and the waves were so rough that one of the passengers was actually swept overboard and drowned. After two miserable months at sea, the ship finally reached the New World. However, they had landed far north of where they were supposed to be, and the territory was unknown. More time was lost attempting to find an appropriate place to harbor and to begin a settlement. They finally landed in Plymouth on December the 23rd, 1620. So think about that. They were there in the dead of winter. Remember, in Massachusetts at that time, it's quite cold in the winter. And remember also that in late December, there isn't much daylight, and they didn't have electric lights, so they could only work during the short daylight hours. There was snow and ice, and it was cold, and every once in a while, a storm would blow in so that they couldn't work at all, but just had to huddle together on their ship. I don't know if we can really appreciate just how hard it was for them. They began building houses, but were terribly delayed by the weather and the fact that a large percentage of their able-bodied were laid up with illness and injury. On January 14th, one of their new houses that they were building caught fire and burned down. Many took to staying aboard ship for lack of anywhere to stay. There were not enough houses built yet, excuse me, and their great house for meetings and such was the one that burned. The close, cramped quarters on the ship, the malnourishment and exposure all began to take their toll. You may have heard of the legend of the five kernels of corn. The story goes that they had run through their supplies and had to ration their seed corn, for if they ate all their corn, they would have none to plant for the new year. So we hear that they lived on five kernels of corn per day. Regardless of that legend, the facts remain that between starvation and disease, By spring, only 53 passengers and half the crew remained alive. Fully half their number had died during that first winter. In the spring, the survivors diligently applied themselves, and at the end of summer and into the fall of 1621, they had managed to do quite well. In November, after the crops had been harvested and food stored for the winter, they decided to have a large feast to celebrate their fortune and to give thanks. They invited their neighboring Wampanoag tribe, I guess this is where Squanto came from, and put on a feed for about 140 people. Their fortunes had changed dramatically in less than a year. We know from the cycle of readings at the time that they would have read the following before their meal. It was timely then, it is timely now.
Can you remind me where this reading comes from?
This is from Deuteronomy.
Do you remember what chapter?
Deuteronomy 8.
Deuteronomy 8. So a reading from the book of Deuteronomy. All the commandment which I command you this day, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply, and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give your fathers. And you shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but that man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. So you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, by walking in his ways and by fearing him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and springs, flowing forth in valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills you can dig copper. And you shall eat and be full, and you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. Take heed, lest you forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I command to you this day. Lest, when you have eaten and are full, and have built goodly houses, and live in them, and when your herds and flocks multiply, and your silver and gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water, who brought you water out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and test you to do you good in the end. Beware, lest you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may confirm his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as at this day. And if you forget the Lord your God, and go after other gods, and serve them and worship them, I solemnly warn you this day that you shall surely perish. Like the nations the Lord makes to perish before you, so shall you perish, because you would not obey the voice of the Lord your God, the word of the Lord.
Amen.
So, bearing in mind all that God has done for us, and bearing in mind this early warning to a proud and haughty nation, let us remember the Lord and give him thanks this Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So, are you going to put this up?
Yeah.
All right, so Mark is going to put this up in the show notes so that if you want to, obviously it's going to be after the fact of Thanksgiving, but something you can possibly think about sharing with your families next year. So with that, we'll close our conversation about Thanksgiving. Any final thoughts on your cigars or the drink?
I like this cigar. I'll buy another one. I've got four more. and I, as I said, I really like the Johnny Walker Black, and the two cigar, the cigar and the scotch go very well together.
Kevin?
Mine was burning pretty quickly. Held a decent ash. Pretty good flavor.
Pair well with your lemonade.
It actually did. It actually did.
So I like the Johnny Walker Double Black. And still haven't quite figured out what that taste is that I'm picking up. But it did enhance the flavor of the cigar, and that's a good sign of a good drink, that when it pairs well with the cigar. So definitely something I might want to add to my rotation as well.
All right.
All right, so as we prepare to close, we hope that you, by the time you listen to this, have enjoyed a wonderful Thanksgiving with family and friends, that you have taken time out of your day to remember that which our Lord has given you, that all that we have comes from Him, and we should always be thankful. Like the reading that I just read and the story that Mark shared, it's very tempting at times, particularly when things are going well, to forget where everything comes from, and not just and not forget that, to be thankful of that, and also even during times of suffering, to be thankful of God's place while He's walking with us, and oftentimes carrying us through those times of suffering. We all have much to be thankful here at Maestogi Mystagogi. We hope you do as well. And be thankful that you might have one to smoke one.
All right. Good night.